Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is proudly sponsored by Trupanion. The Trupanion plan provides medical insurance for pets, helping pet owners to protect against those unexpected veterinary costs. Puppies have a knack for getting into trouble, and when that happens, the veterinary bills can add up. Trupanion's claim data shows the average foreign body cost for a puppy is almost $1,000, and a broken bone costs over $800. With that in mind, Trupanion's breeder support program allows you to send your litters home with a special offer that waives the waiting period, so coverage goes into effect immediately. Getting started is free and easy. Just follow the link from my partner page and mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are joined again today by our favorite veterinary voice. Dr. Marty Greer is here to talk about what can be a very dangerous and very scary situation with your dog, and that is an intestinal blockage. So we're going to talk about how to know what's going on, how to treat it, how to prevent it, all the good stuff, and the things that make dogs eat things they shouldn't eat, and with special notice to pregnant bitches, because what we're really talking about is y'all are getting to learn from my personal horror story. So, yay.
Yeah, what a way to start, huh?
Yeah, right? All right, talk to us, Marty.
Well, ingesting foreign material is very common in dogs, and sometimes in cats as well. Mostly it's dogs, and I think there's a lot of reasons that dogs eat weird stuff. I don't think we can call it only one thing. There's certainly situations where dogs do it just because they're young and they're naughty and they don't really know any better.
Right.
So they get into trouble.
They explore the world with their mouths, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, intentionally or unintentionally, they swallow things. And some of them are normally edible, but the size that they eat them is such that they can't pass. Or, you know, like if they eat too big of a piece of rawhide, most dogs can pass rawhide, but sometimes you'll have a piece that's too large. Sometimes eat things that are clearly indigestible. Rugs with long strings, pantyhose that are long and stringy, those are the most dangerous because those can get caught around the tongue, around other parts of the intestinal tract in the stomach, things like that, and they can cause some really serious damage. But there's underwear and socks and golf balls and knives
rocks.
And diamond rings and rocks and floral wire and just about anything that you can imagine that you could pick up. Your dog will pick up as well, and if it's smaller than their head, they'll try to swallow it.
Yes.
So they don't really have good judgment. Sometimes there are things that seem like they should be tasty, like underwear and socks or dishcloths or dish towels, the wrappings off of sausages or other kinds of cooked meat.
Squeaky toys.
Squeaky toys, right, and non-squeaky toys as well, stuffed toys. And sometimes there are things that you can't even imagine that they would want to eat, floral wire, diamond rings, pens. Like, there's nothing about that, but even hangers, you know, there's nothing about those that ever seem edible, but to a dog, they seem to be acceptable. So sometimes they do it because they're young and naughty. Sometimes they do it when they're nauseous. And if they had access to grass, they would eat grass.
Mm.
But when there's snow on the ground, when they're locked in the house, when there are certain conditions, they can't. So they may lick the carpet, they may lick the furniture, they may start to lick things off the floor that they shouldn't eat. Now, a number of winters ago, we had a dog that was in a machine shop with her owner. Her owner ran the machine shop, and he took her to work with him, and she got nauseous. It was a ton of snow outside. She started licking the floor of the shop, and she ingested about 200 shards of metal.
Oh!
You know, she was looking for grass to make herself vomit, but she couldn't find it. So, you know, I guess metal shards are a close second, so she thought that would be okay.
Oh, my gosh.
So you'll sometimes see things like that. And the pregnant dog situation, of course, is complicated by a pregnancy, but again, that may be from some kind of pica, some kind of nausea, that they feel nauseous, they're trying to find some way to make themselves feel better, and as a result, they eat things that are inappropriate. So we can see that. We see dogs do this because of separation anxiety.
Right.
They get panicked, they don't know what to do with themselves, so they start to chew up things and swallow things that they shouldn't. So there's a whole bunch of different scenarios for why I think dogs do it. And I don't know that finding the causes is important as realizing that that your dog is at risk and trying to manage the risk to reduce the chances of them ending up either with a blockage that's a perforation and fatal, a blockage that you can't afford to fix, a blockage that happens so many times that finally your insurance company says, look, we're not covering your dog eating tennis balls.
Right. The clumber that they threatened to put a zipper in because he ate so many rocks.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So sometimes our best solutions are to manage their separation anxiety, and that can require seeing a behaviorist, a veterinarian that's really good with behavioral management and appropriate drug therapy to reduce their anxiety. Sometimes it may mean keeping them crated more often than you would like. But in light of the fact that it can be a fatal disease and frequently is, because either people can't afford to take the dog to surgery or it's not diagnosed fast enough and the dog ends up with serious damage to the intestines or perforations, you know, there's a variety of things that can mean that the dog's long-term outcome isn't good. So it gets to be pretty complicated.
So let's talk about your dog is playing with a stuffy toy and shredding it, and you notice that parts of it are missing, and you think, maybe I should make it throw up. I don't know that we've ever actually talked about inducing vomiting. So here you go.
Yeah.
Let's do inducing vomiting.
Yeah, we really need to talk about this because there's a lot of information online and even from some of the poison control centers that says using hydrogen peroxide is appropriate. And I've actually seen some very bad effects from peroxide. It's a much better choice to contact your veterinarian, whether it's your regular vet or an emergency clinic. Go to the hospital, get apomorphine either in the eye as a subconjunctival tablet or as an injection. You can give it intravenously or subcutaneously and induce vomiting with a drug that's meant to do that. It's absolutely appropriate to do that.
Okay, I want you to go back and say that again. It's a type of morphine.
Yes, right. It's called apomorphine. It is not the kind of morphine that makes you feel good. It's the kind of morphine that makes you feel terrible. It makes dog vomit. Typically, within about 5 to 7 minutes of the injection, we have pretty successful vomiting. So that works really well. It is only available at a veterinary clinic. It is not something that your vet's going to be able to dispense to you because it is apomorphine. So it's not a drug that they're just going to say, here, have a bottle of this. Your dog is likely to ingest another
That's what
item.
I was just going to ask. Can I go buy some? Because I'm saying.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I've seen two very serious reactions to peroxide in my 38 years of practice.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a cat that died from gastric ulceration from peroxide. And the other was a dog that ended up with an air embolism. So because of the peroxide, it foamed up. It caused an embolism in her bloodstream. It went to her brain. She ended up with brain damage. So you can see some very serious effects from peroxide. So I'm not going to tell you that dumping a bottle of peroxide down your dog is innocuous. It has some risks.
I had an Akita seize on me because he had eaten a bag of dog food. I'm trying to get him to throw it up before he bloats, and he went into full-blown seizures. So then he's bloating and seizing, and I'm trying to get him to the clinic. It was a great day.
Yeah, that's a lovely combination. Not one that
awesome.
Turns out well.
No, he lived, but I'm saying it was not good.
Yeah. So it's important that you have a good connection with your emergency veterinarian. And also, if it's a foreign body, poison control can't really give you much information about whether you should make the dog vomit or not. But if it's a toxin or a drug, say you drop one of your prescription medications on the floor and you're not sure what the effect is going to be, or you come home and you find the dog's ingested a whole bottle of ibuprofen, which are sugar-coated so they taste good, you know, there's a lot of different things that poison control can help you with, but they can't really tell you how big was the sock and is it going to go through.
Right.
So, you know, you really can't call them for that kind of information.
Right. Absolutely.
There, of course, is a charge if you call poison control, but it's usually well worth it because the money you save in not treating the dog inappropriately
Right. Makes
it worth spending the money on.
Right.
So I love poison control. I use it frequently, and I have for many, many years, but it doesn't always solve your problem. Now, one of the solutions that I like the best is if you've seen your dog eat something and you know it just went down, you call your vet, you go in, you induce vomiting with apomorphine. The dog feels crummy for a couple of hours, a little bit sleepy. They go home, everything is fine. Everything is right with the world because whatever they ate was still in their stomach and it came back up. And generally, if it went down, it'll come back up, including things like popsicle sticks.
Oh,
I don't know how they align, but they can. Now, kids, as it turns out, children have a completely opposite reaction. Kids will get stuff stuck in their esophagus and their stomach, but once it gets out of the stomach, it can get through the intestines. Dogs, on the other hand, if they can swallow it, it doesn't mean it gets through the intestines.
Right.
So they tend to hang up just outside the stomach or just before they get to the large intestine. So that's typically where we'll see things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll see some of these long, skinny things. Like we had a dog that ate dental floss and bits of a Nyla bone, and the Nyla bone held onto the dental floss in the stomach, but the parts of the dental floss went down into the intestine. And so It was basically sawing back and forth between the stomach and the intestines. It was really quite ugly. So there's some really bad things that can happen with these long, skinny, like I said at the beginning, pantyhose and the threads from rugs and balloon strings and anything that's long and skinny for dogs and cats. It can be really quite disastrous. They come in with a needle attached to the thread. Cats like to do that. They like to swallow needles and thread. And those turn into real messes because the needle holds things up and the thread continues to move. It's just a mess. So you want to avoid that. But if you've seen your dog eat something, you know what it is, you know how recently they ate it, and it'll take hours for the stomach to empty, especially with something large, you want to go in and have vomiting induced. Now, if you don't, or you didn't recognize it at the time, and you can identify what it was, sometimes canned spinach will get things to pass through the intestines that won't otherwise pass. Now, long, skinny things, big rocks, canned spinach isn't going to save you. But bits and pieces of things like the 200 shards of metal off the machine shop floor, the diamond ring, pieces of pen, you know, small pieces of plastic, small bits of things, those will come through if you feed canned spinach. And I'm pretty enthusiastic about the amount of canned spinach I feed. Like, I feed one can per large dog per day.
Okay. I know this is the only one we've talked about on this is in reference to something else. And I love that. And I've actually told it to people since then because I thought it was so fresh and new to me.
And it won't work on everything, so I'm not going to tell you that that's a cure-all, and you aren't going to get that as an alternative for every possible foreign body, but, you know, things like golf balls, they've got to come out surgically.
Right.
But there are other things that can come through, or vomiting can be induced and create a solution. And the other part of the problem, as in a lot of pieces of fabric, the dish towel, the hand towel, the dishcloth,
stuffies,
pantyhose, the underwear, the stuffy animals, those things don't show up on x-ray. So they're not easy to find. They're not easy to diagnose. And one of the reasons that a lot of radiologists read our x-rays is because we need information from them to see if they see an obstructive pattern or a plication on the intestines that suggests a foreign body.
Right.
So many times they won't show up. If it's a metal piece like a staple or a leash or, you know, metal things will show up really well. Diamond rings show up great. Those are awesome to take out because everybody's happy. You can see that in an x-ray. It comes through with spinach. And then you know where it is, it's all good. But it can be really quite difficult to find some of these other particular items because they just don't show up radiographically.
Right. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited, I just can't hide it. Yeah, I know, I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop! Yeah! Pure Dog Talks. How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to laura@puredogtalk.com. And make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included. Because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more, and this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. It may not be here tomorrow. So your dog has snuck a stuffy toy, torn it up and killed it and ate it because she thought it was a squirrel.
And tasty.
And after a few weeks or so, she starts acting punky. What are you going to see?
Not much. That's the problem. Not much. Other than just a sick dog. So it's really quite challenging to figure out. And we've seen things sit in the stomach for up to 15 months. Not days, not weeks. Months. I had a Doberman that ate a muzzle, and it lasted in his stomach for 15 months before it caught in his intestines.
Wow.
So they can stay in there for an incredible amount of time, and of course, stomach acid doesn't make the muzzle any more supple and flexible and easy for him to pass.
Right.
So it's absolutely amazing. There's actually a journal that we see in the veterinary side. At the same month every year, we get a publication that says, "Your dog ate what?" And veterinarians submit
yes.
the weirdest things that
I've actually seen that. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
Terrifying,
it is. So if
but
you're really
hysterical.
Bored, yeah. Yeah. If you're really bored someday and you want to just read the internet for a bit and see some interesting things, you'll see those things. And I remember many years ago when I was just looking again about a dog that swallowed a knife, like an 8-inch knife handle first. So it is truly incredible what dogs, I mean, the knife probably tasted good. It had food on it. They swallowed it. But anything that you touch, that you handle a lot, tends to be the things that dogs will eat. Remote controls for the TV and your cell phone and your socks and your underwear and all those things. I mean, they tend to eat their very favorite person's socks and underwear, which
yes.
I think should be a compliment, but I really
you
don't
know,
think that.
This is sort of terrifying and slightly inappropriate, but my very first wire hair when she was pregnant, only when she was pregnant, but when she was pregnant, we're going to segue into pregnant bitches, she loved dirty underwear. And leather hat bands.
I don't understand that, but it's common enough to know that there's, it's not unique to one dog. It is universal. So their very favorite person is the item that they're going to be
yes.
most likely to chew up.
Yes.
So, yeah. And you've got to be fast. I mean, you've just got to figure out a way to keep the laundry where the dog can't get it, or keep the dog in the crate, or put things where the dog can't reach it, like the dishcloth off the sink. You can't just throw it over the edge of the sink and hope that it dries. Now the dog is going to come along and find it. So these tend to be repeatable things, you know, and
yes.
frequently we'll have people come in and they'll say, yeah, my dog is vomiting. And so you take the history and you say, is there anything they could have gotten into? Did they get into the garbage? Is there anything they could have ingested? Well, you know, this would be the third time she had a tennis ball. And it's like, really? Really?
Right.
I mean, your insurance company's not going to put up with that.
Right.
I am shocked that you haven't learned something because the dog isn't going to learn.
Right.
Flat out, simple. The dog's not going to learn that if you eat a tennis ball, you go to surgery. It's
right.
not going to happen.
They don't have that ability to reason like we do, right? That's like the whole point of the exercise.
Yes. And even veterinarians don't always reason well enough to know that their dogs are safe.
Right.
So I've had colleagues that their dogs have eaten things multiple times and they're like, fine, that's it. Not taking them to surgery another time. I'm like, that's a little harsh. If you let them eat it, I think you need to be responsible for it.
Right.
So that's my personal opinion, but not necessarily shared by everyone.
Okay, so you see things like vomiting, maybe refusing to eat. Talk us through that.
Right. Typically, we'll see vomiting, loss of appetite, and significant lethargy. Really, really depressed. They'll come in and just lay down on the floor in the exam room where they normally would be jumping around. Now, usually there's not diarrhea. If it's associated with diarrhea, it's usually not a blockage because a blockage will cause things not to come through.
Right. So also no bowel movement.
Right. Right. And usually they're not running a fever unless it's a perforation. But if it's something sharp or something that's thawed through, then you will get perforations and a fever. Abdominal pain, just a really sick, really lethargic, really tough looking dog. You got to make sure that your veterinarian looks under the tongue of your dog or cat. And I will tell you, it's a significant challenge. You only get one good chance. So you've got to have a good technician, good lighting, and a good strategy because the dog or cat's only going to let you see once. But frequently you can diagnose under the tongue. You'll see a string, a piece of carpet, something like that. If it's a long, skinny thing, it'll get caught under the tongue. And if it's something sort of short and you can dislodge it, sometimes that'll come through. But again, I wouldn't make any promises to that. You really need to be aware that these dogs need to be well hydrated. They need to be well cared for. And sometimes with good hydration and good anti-nausea medication, we can get them to pass things that they shouldn't have eaten in the first place. Most times you end up in surgery, and depending on where you live and the level of veterinary care that your dog needs, if they have to take pieces of intestine out, things like that, it can be up to $5,000 or $6,000 for this type of intervention. So you want to be aware that you can save yourself a lot of money by being careful with your dogs and cats' access to long, skinny things and things that they should.
So now let's talk about, we'll get down to brass tacks. This, yes, happened to me. Dog stole a squeaky toy. Pregnant bitch, not eating. Couple days from whelping, you're thinking, okay, she's full of puppies, whatever. Starts vomiting. You do an x-ray. You don't see anything. Keeps vomiting. You go in. You're now in a world of hurt.
Right. And with puppies complicating the x-ray, it's
right.
even more challenging for you to be able to see what's going on in there.
Right.
So, yes, those dogs end up in surgery. We actually had one just a couple months ago here, a Bernese Mountain Dog, same scenario. She was pregnant. She came in. She wasn't feeling well. We ultrasounded her. Oh, yeah, she's pregnant. but the vomiting was too significant to ignore, too much to consider just to be normal for a dog that was pregnant. So we sent her to the referral center, and miraculously, they took out the towel. She was only about 4.5 weeks pregnant. She finished the pregnancy. She had 8 beautiful puppies in spite of that, and only because we had a surgeon that was absolutely brilliant and careful with the drug therapy and aware that this litter was really important to her. So they managed her through that pregnancy very, very well. And it sounds like you were fortunate with yours as well.
Ridiculously fortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. Because some veterinarians are not that willing to work with people who are breeders and don't really consider that to be in their realm. So they don't really care about the puppies. And that's really tough when you've got a valuable litter, a valuable dog, and no one wants to have to make the decision between the litter and their bitch.
Well, and we were unbelievably lucky because I have an amazing veterinarian who is a tremendous surgeon who is very, very breeder friendly and I've worked with her. My mom worked with her. I mean, you know, this is like a long time relationship. And we were close enough to when we could take the puppies that we could C-section the puppies and then go and deal with the blockage. But it has been a challenge.
Yeah. And the blockage surgeries are difficult. They're messy. They're a hard recovery. The dogs don't feel really great for at least 36 hours after surgery. Most of the time, they won't want to eat or do anything really. It takes easily 36 hours before they're back on their feet. So you complicate that with a pregnancy, and it gets to be very difficult. So these are challenging cases. But really, prevention is the best thing I can tell you.
Any tips on managing your bitch or any dog with a blockage that's had blockage surgery, particularly down into the intestines? Like you said, it's easier to deal with when it's in the stomach, but down lodged in the intestines, I know that's a bit trickier.
Yeah, they really have a tough recovery. They've got to stay in the hospital on fluids and nausea medications and antibiotics, and it just takes some real patience to get them through it. And of course, the goal is to get them eating as soon as possible, but many times they're just really not up to it for 24 to 36 hours, so that's tricky. But prevention is going to be your best bet, and that's really going to mean a covered laundry basket. You teach your kids not to throw their backpacks on the floor. You teach your husband not to leave his socks laying around.
Right.
You know, it's really a challenge. With other dogs, you've got to be careful. If you've got one dog that's got a safe toy, the other dog can't have it.
Right.
Cats with toys, because cat toys are little.
Yes.
They go into dogs, and
yes,
they're fun to play with the cat, but the dog doesn't tolerate it well, because those little sparkle balls or whatever they happen to be, those end up being swallowed. So there's just a lot of things that can go really wrong. And like I said, I don't want to overlook cats because cats like needles and thread. I've taken out golf handle covers. I've taken all kinds of weird things out of cats too, because they'll eat strange things as well. And of course, they're even smaller and have a much greater likelihood of intestinal blockage. And then we get to things like ferrets. And those are the worst because they have teeny tiny little intestines and one teeny little bit of foam. And ferrets love to chew on foam. So the foam cushions, the foam bed, one tiny little bit of foam in a ferret will cause a major blockage. So
interesting.
It can be really difficult.
Surgery on a ferret. Now that just perked up my day.
Yeah, those are really a blast.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're not much fun. So, you know, a piece of foam the size of a raisin is all it takes to cause a serious blockage.
Oh my God.
So you've got to be careful.
I know the answer to this, but I'll let you speak to it. Specific breeds of dogs that tend to be more prone to inappropriate naughtiness and consumption of inedibles.
Retrievers.
Yes.
You know, in a word, retrievers.
Yeah.
Bernese Mountain Dogs and retrievers. Berners like to eat underwear and socks. All retrievers, they're very mouthy dogs. They're by nature meant to pick up things and carry them around with them. Sometimes they swallow them by accident. You know, sometimes you'll see them running around and then something disappears. Then they have this sort of surprised look on their face like, I don't know where that went.
What happened here?
Yeah. And sometimes they just know that you're coming toward them. So if you swallow faster, your owner can't get to you fast enough.
Right.
So you can swallow it before they get to you. So they can swallow faster than you can run.
Yes.
So if you're running toward them, they're gulping faster. You're not going to win that.
And that's just not a good thing.
No.
Maybe teach the dog, I'll trade you.
That's a great game to teach a young dog, because
yes,
the stakes are much lower when you're trading off for something small that's probably edible.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Here's a cookie. Give me that, whatever it is.
Yep, drop it. Give it here. I'll trade you this for a really yummy piece of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that you can teach the dog to come over and bring you things.
Right.
And there's really fun things you can teach the dogs to do with those types of games. But it does take quite a bit of work when they're young to get out of that.
I will add Clumbers to your list of retrievers.
Yeah.
They too retrieve, and that is the breed that I've had the most experience with eating inappropriate things. The one I mentioned at the top, that the vet threatened to put a zipper in the dog because he had 7 Seven blockage surgeries. Not kidding. The first one was at my house when I was showing him, and he ate a rock. And I didn't know. I'm like, what in the world? And we're at a dog show. And anyway. So yeah. I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. And it doesn't always have to be a retriever. Small dogs tend to have fewer problems with it than the large breed dogs in general.
Right.
But right across the board, there's no guarantee that a dog couldn't have eaten something.
Right.
They all have a tendency to swallow things that they really shouldn't.
Probably shouldn't, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Marty. I sure appreciate your time today. I hope all of you listeners have the opportunity to, we're making lemonade out of my lemons. So it seemed like a great topic to talk about.
It's a wonderful learning experience and one that we should all benefit from. So we don't have to experience that firsthand.
Yeah.
So don't throw things over the top of the crate when the dog is in it, because they'll pull it through and eat it. I mean, even a crated dog isn't necessarily a safe dog.
And that's one thing I know for a fact. Wire hairs, the breed that I'm dealing with here, they are terrible about pulling things in the crates. And that's like lesson number one when you have a wire hair pointer. Don't put anything on the dog crate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had an Orzoi that was in a crate and was able to reach with her long skinny leg out of the crate, pull a bottle of Gorilla Glue into her crate. And when you swallow Gorilla Glue, it goes down liquid and very quickly turns into a solid inside the dog's stomach, not to be passed. So it creates a tremendous, beautiful cast of the inside of the stomach with Rugal folds and all.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome. But again, not the kind of experience that you want to have as firsthand. So I don't recommend that you let the dog get to things, even when they're crated, that they can reach from the top or sides of the crate. So.
Wow. I'm just mind blown over that one. That is just horrifying. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
If there's a way for a dog to manage to cost you money, they will figure it out.
All you people out there, Trupanion, go buy your insurance now. I'm telling you.
Yes, because they will cover this.
Yes, they do. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, Marty, thank you so very much. I really appreciate your time. And as always, we appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.